With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beaten Track podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today I'm joined by Aaron Starkey of Slow Readers Club. And we have a wonderful chat. We go in on all the records that have soundtracked Aaron's creative journey to date. Some really, really interesting bits and pieces in there. An amazing shout out for the first record he remembers buying, which gives us a brilliant throwback to episode 2, right at the very beginning of Off the Beaten Track. He chooses the Benchmark record, which is great. Before we get on with the episode, big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. And thanks to Ryan for putting this podcast together for us and hooking me up with Aaron. And obviously thanks to the Slow Readers Club for guesting. If this is your first time listening to Off the Beaten Track, then when you finish listening to Aaron talking about his record choices, then go and have a look in the archives, because you will find you'll actually find episodes in there from some of the guests that we talk about on here. And there's over 160 episodes with some of your favourite musicians, actors, comedians, DJs, producers. So go and have a rummage in the archives. And if that's not enough, then I do also put out three radio shows each week and video episodes and standalone episodes on Patreon. So you can find out about all of this at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. Let's get on with today's episode. Please enjoy Off the Beaten Track podcast with Aaron Starkey of the Slow Readers Club.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whiffin.
And we are recording. Okay, joining me today via the means of Zoom is Aaron Starkey of Slow Readers Club. Hello.
Hi, Stu. How are you doing, man?
Yeah, well, all right. Thank you. Well, all right. Are you up in Manchester at the moment?
I am indeed, yeah. I'm in a leafy suburb called Urmston. It's quite a boring little town, really, but so I'm doing it a disservice. It's not too bad, but I suppose everywhere's a bit boring at the moment. Everywhere's half shut, isn't it? So
yeah. So before we get on to chatting records, Aaron, how have you found the last sort of, you know, 4 or 5 months as a human and as a creative?
I mean, obviously it was a bit terrifying at first, and I suppose it's become normalized a little bit to a degree over time, but it actually coincided with the release of our last album. As lockdown was happening, our tour was getting cancelled and in-stores were getting cancelled and all that kind of thing. So it was a bit of a blow in that regard, but it just made us a bit think on our feet a bit and be creative with how we sort of used our time. And we did like lockdown versions of our tunes where we each recorded a part, our own parts, and stitched it together and put that out in the world. And that went down really well. Did some listening parties with Tim Burgess and we've done a few live streams, some for like the charity for like the music industry for United We Stream, and some for our own purposes, you know, like we did, like done ticketed shows. So but mainly we've been writing in that period. I mean, there's only so much we can have control over, and the main thing we can have control over is being able to write, you know what I mean? We can't do shows, can't do shows with an audience. So it's been a great for that, really. I mean, we started off in March, April time, writing from home and improved our own studio setups at home so we could record properly and share ideas properly. But it's been good. It's just been a different approach to making music, and we've got different tunes out of it. So, and I think we'll keep that process as part of what we do, as well as jam it. I mean, ordinarily we jam together and write in that way. But I think because we were writing in isolation, different stuff came out, or different stuff had more time to establish itself, if you like. Because if you're jamming in a room, often stuff only gets through if everybody's buzzing in the moment, and it tends to be the more upbeat, full-on tunes that come to fruition that way.
I think it's really interesting. I've interviewed quite a few bands over lockdown that were, you know, in the middle of an album campaign. And that have done things very similar to what you've done as well. And I think it's something that, you know, God forbid we're still here, you know, this time next year. And I think when people are then doing campaigns and that next year for whatever release, I think obviously there'll be the standard stuff that bands have always done, but I still think they'll draw from what's happened in the last 5 months and bolt on to you know, the idea of, like, what Tim Burgess come up with was just a fucking genius idea, like, you know. And you know what he's done there was brilliant, and the whole kind of thing of, like, you know, online gigs and things like that, I think is stuff that all of the stuff that's come out of that, it's punk as fuck, isn't it? It's like, it's literally, right, okay, well, what do? We've got to start, you know, we've got to do what we can do with what's at our disposal, and it's thrown up some crazy stuff, and I think that will definitely end up getting carried over to post-lockdown, sort of, you know.
Yeah, I think so. I think people will end up being a bit more creative with the live stream stuff as well, because obviously, ordinarily you're on a stage and you need a light show and all that kind of stuff, but there's nothing to say that it has to be presented in that way, because there's no audience there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's obviously, you obviously make sense to do what you've done in the past, but there might be other ways of doing it. I mean, I'm not sort of saying we'll suddenly do Thriller or something. Do you know what I mean?
Why not?
But I think, you know, there's room for it to be just different. You know, like, whether it's an audience with format or playing in more unusual places that still have decent acoustics and all that kind of thing. It'll be interesting. I'm sure we'll keep that side on, whether the gigs are back or not, I would have thought, just because it's cool.
Yeah. Aaron, track one, song with the greatest ever intro.
Yeah, that was Arctic Monkeys, You Look Good on the Dance Floor. They're a band that just blew me away when they first arrived, and that, like, there's so much energy, and, like, so, like, the drums are so frenetic, and it's sort of, it's like a meandering lead guitar part with a sort of decent, like rhythm part underneath. That's just a top tune, and I think they were, like, lyrically as well, I think is amazing. But obviously, I'm not talking about lyrics in the context of an intro. But yeah, I think that was a, you know, really powerful statement when that came out. That, you know, the band that had arrived and sounding really unique as well. I don't think there was anybody around that was sounding quite like him. It was exciting stuff.
Totally agree. And just that little ride, Don't Believe the Hype, before they just drop into that, you know, that opening chord. And it's got such urgency as well when that song drops. It's like, it's just, it fires along that. And I mean, personally, I think them first two albums I thought were great. And I'm not I'm not as into the kind of more rock and roll kind of stuff that they've grown into, you know. I don't
know whether they've just tried to court the American market a little bit, presumably. I don't really know, but yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I was sort of fonder of their earlier stuff.
Yeah, totally. Especially lyrically as well, I think. You know, I'm far more interested in hearing, you know, young lads talking about scrapping with Paul Cues, you know, wearing their Reeboks and stuff. I like that. It's, you know, it's kind of, it's, you know, it's what Madness done, it's what the Kinks done, it's that kind of social commentary, and I really like that. And I think, you know, they absolutely smashed it on that album, for sure. Aaron, I'm going to ask you, in regards to intros and writing for Slow Readers Club. How much emphasis do you put on an intro? And has the way that you've written over, you know, the last 10 years changed insofar as the way that people listen to music now as well, insofar as streaming and Shazamming like songs and just the kind of fact that there's so much distraction from what you're listening to if you're looking at a YouTube or Spotify? I've spent 2 years trying to get this question right, and I still never get it quite right. But do you get where I'm kind of coming from?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, it's for a band to become someone's favourite band is a very difficult thing these days because it's such a transitory medium. It's like it's available. Somebody says, "Oh, I've listened to this band." You can do so within 3-4 seconds. I remember when I was a kid, and I'd go and get a new album, and I'd get on the bus to go to Walsingham near me and go to the record shop and then read the sleeve notes on the way back, and I didn't hear it till I got in. And that's a completely different experience to how people can experience music now. So it's a lot harder. I mean, it's obviously you can be exposed far more widely and instantly than you ever could before as well. So there's positives to it. But yeah, I think there can be a tendency for people to move on and shuffle or whatever. It's difficult, but I don't think we're right with that in mind as such. I think we're big on melodies in the band, and whether that's the vocal melody or the guitar or synth part or whatever. Sometimes it'll be a synth intro, sometimes it'll be guitar intro, or sometimes it'll just kick straight into the vocal. Or there's not really, I think it's whatever works for that particular tune, really. But we've never been rightly or wrongly influenced much by what's flavour of the month on the radio what Spotify trends are anything like that. We just like what we all like individually, and that comes together to form what we are.
I do think that question is probably, in fairness, more tailored towards kind of, I guess, more kind of pop music, insofar as you hear a trend now in so many pop songs where literally starts with a chorus now, and it's like just trying to just hook straight away. And well, for track two, Aaron, I'm going to ask you the first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you.
I was quite fortunate. I went to a school called Newall Green High School, and this was the junior school actually. Newall Green Junior School in Woodenshaw, and we had a head teacher who was big into music. He'd sit and play the guitar, and they had like a band. He had a big band and stuff like that as well, and he played like Beatles and Bob Dylan and all that kind of thing. And there was another teacher, the deputy head, Mr. Holt, it was his name, and this was one of the songs he used to sing folk songs mainly, and this was one of them. It was a song called Birmingham Sunday. I think the main famous version is by Joan Baez, but it's about, it's the melody really that was, it's a melancholy, it's a traditional folk melody from like a Scottish sort of love song, I think. But the lyrics in this version are about the bombing of a Baptist church in America by the Ku Klux Klan. But I think as a kid, I mean, he explained the context of the tune in the he was obviously trying to get that across and say these sort of horrible things go on in the world. But, when we would have been, 9, 10 or something like that, it's quite sort of heavy stuff to deal with, I suppose. But it was cool. But I think I was probably moved mainly by the melody. It's quite melancholy. But, then once you sort of take on board the lyrics and what it's about.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I often sort of knocks around my head still now.
Really?
It'll just pop in there. Yeah. I'll just be like making a brew or whatever. And my missus goes mad at me for sort of singing it. It's quite mournful, but it still kicks around. So that's the one that came to mind.
Okay. So for track three, while we're talking about school, it's fitting that I'm going to ask you the song that reminds you of your time at school.
Yeah, that one was, there was a few different ones that were kicking around for that because I had mates with very different.
You can have some honourable mentions, tastes. Aaron. Yeah, you can throw
yeah,
a few
yeah,
in
okay,
there, mate.
Yeah. My honourable mentions will go to, I used to spend pretty much every weekend at my mate Dave McDonough's house, and he'd have stuff, he'd have Roxy Music and Beatles and Bee Gees and stuff like that. It was like good pop cheese, if you like, kind of stuff he was into. So I think what was the one that we Slave to Love was a track, a Roxy Music track that used to play quite a bit. That one was what that nearly made it as the answer to this question. But I think I went for, what did I go for in the end? There's another friend of mine. He was probably a bit sort of on the cooler end of the music spectrum at the time, and he was into Nirvana and stuff, and also Radiohead, and it was High and Dry. But that album, the Ben's album, that. He introduced me to that album at the time. I think I was probably into cheesy rock at that time myself. You know what I mean? Like Bon Jovi or something. But he introduced me to radio, and High and Dry was like one of the standout tracks from that album where I just thought, this is properly cool music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the one, I think.
I think that album from, you know, I guess... You know, I'm a fair few years older than you, Aaron, and obviously when the first album came out, it was around the time of, you know, all the stuff that was happening stateside, and, you know, all the attention was on the likes of, you know, Nirvana and Pearl Jam and Pumpkins and stuff like that. And then, you know, fast forward a few years, and I guess probably at the sort of time of Britpop, really, when every, you know, it was Blur and Oasis and Suede and things like that, and this record comes out that's just otherworldly, you know. And I think it was like that first album for me just kind of washed over me. It was like, you know, Creep was a great little single, but
yeah,
it that album did not have the depth that Ben's
no
had.
No,
and then
no,
fuck me, that, you know, that was the beginning of a serious fucking journey into music, you know. And it was, that was the gateway, I think, and it's a heavy record, the Ben's, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think lyrically and vocally, it's amazing. Some great guitar on it, but like the falsetto, and I mean, I do a bit of falsetto in what we do as well. It's probably their influence really that sort of made me explore that side of my voice back in those days, and that sort of stuck around. But like Fade Out, Street Spirit. Me and my brother used to play that in the house. He's in the band with me. So they've always been around, and I think obviously they moved very quickly away from that, didn't they, with the sort of OK Computer, and then onto sort of more electronic stuff with Kid A and all that kind of thing. But and In Rainbows, I can't remember the name of the other albums. I do miss the discernible lyrics and from Radiohead's work these days. But I did love that album, and I think it's definitely had an influence on me as a sort of as an artist, definitely.
You mentioned that you and your brother, you know, would sit at home and play it and stuff. So, you know, even at a young age, was you sort of deconstructing music and trying to work out how it was put together?
I guess so. I mean, I was quite happy for it as a kid to just sing other people's tunes, really. And I did study music at GCSE, and part of that was writing. But I didn't. I did a very, very subpar Bon Jovi type tune, I think, during my music GCSE. But writing wise, but I was always fond of a, you know, good hooky melody. And really, you know, as I got older, more interested in lyricists that are sort of autobiographical, like Kurt Cobain or John Lennon or something like that, where they were saying something, especially when you're a teenager growing up and this hormone's flying around everywhere and you're looking for answers and stuff like that. People that sort of spoke about real life and about emotion and all that kind of stuff. That kind of music really resonated with me. I went to uni and did film and stuff like that. The music sat to one side for me for a little bit of time. And then once I graduated, and my wife got in a band and Kurt got in a band of his own, my brother, I thought, I'll have a go. So I found the guys in Omerta. They were advertising for a singer in the Loop. So I joined Omerta, which was the band before the Slow Ridge Club that me and Jim were in. I think we'd always, me and my brother had always, my dad was played guitar and sort of both. So we'd always like play stuff like having seen Back to the Future, played Johnny B. Goode and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Or Elvis, because my dad was into Elvis. And then as we got older and got more capable on guitar, it was like Radiohead and Roses and Beatles and stuff like that.
How was school? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I mean, it was. There was a few people there because I sang and stuff in concerts and that. There was a few people that I'd call me gay and stuff like that. So it was a bit of bullying sometimes, but on the whole, I enjoyed it. I was sort of in junior school. I was sort of a middle of the class sort of academically, and then one of my teachers said I needed a rocket up my ass, and then by the time I got to secondary school, I was all right. I was doing okay, sort of, you know, decent enough at both most things.
Was you confident with that?
Yeah, I was. I probably invited some of the bullying by being a bit too cocky, to be honest, looking back on it. But
what about the attention that got you, good and bad? You know, did you want attention?
Probably, yeah. I think that's there's no front man out there that doesn't want attention in some degree in it. But I must have done. But I enjoyed singing as a sort of as a release. As you know, even when I wasn't writing tunes, it was like it was a release to sort of get feelings out and all that kind of stuff. It's a cool gift to have to be able to sing and move yourself and move others and all that kind of thing. So it was once I felt as though I could do that, I was sort of, when there was opportunities there at school and that, I'd go and stand up and sing stuff, you know. And yeah, it sort of, anybody that puts themselves out there is going to get, if they want, you know, if you're going to get praise, then you're going to get criticism, I suppose. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, totally. First record you remember buying from a record shop?
This is rubbish. But this is
this one's the one that's always got to be rubbish.
Yeah.
Never try and be cool with this one.
No, it was Stiltskin's Inside.
Oh, mate, that's the benchmark, right? The benchmark for this question, right? When everybody says what you said, like, oh, it's a bit embarrassing, this one, it's a bit rubbish. My second ever guest on this podcast was Russell Lissack from Block Party. And he chimed in with Stiltskin. And from then on, when everyone says, it's not very cool, it's like, it ain't got to be cool. Russell from Block Party chose Stiltskin. So you're in good company, Aaron.
All right, okay, I'll take it. But yeah, it was, I think they were sort of a poor man's Nirvana, weren't they? But they were, it was on a Levi's ad or something when I was a kid. And I suppose in those days, those were like one of the, a big platform for a band to have. I mean, still, ads still are, obviously, but it was the exposure that track got was ridiculous, really.
That's huge. But,
yeah. Yeah. But Yeah, I mean, it's all right. It's an all right record.
Do you know, I've not listened to it for years, but like I remember, like, I mean, I was DJing when it came out, so I was playing it in the rock clubs, and it was a huge, like I said, a huge number one record. And I do remember the playover was a bit of a rip off of Today by the Smashing Pumpkins, if I'm right,
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, possibly.
But do you know what the singer does now?
No.
He fronts Genesis now.
Does he really?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
There you go. You mentioned earlier that your dad played guitar and a play Elvis at home. Like, was there always records on at home growing up?
Yeah, big time. I mean, my dad played guitar. He busked as well with the guy next door, and he'd sort of busk. Sorry, my daughter's just walked in. He'd busk sort of Smith's records, and what else did he play? Like, what was it? John Denver and stuff like that. And Beatles stuff. It's quite eclectic.
That's a hybrid, John Denver and the Smiths.
Yeah. But I can't remember what John Denver track it was. Like, was it Leaving on a Jet Plane?
Oh, that's a tune, that is. Yeah. What a tune.
They were sort of busker staples, I think. But he was a DJ. He'd like done a bit of DJing as well, like, you know. So he had hits of the day on, you know, like the Duran Duran and Yazoo and stuff like that. So like big synthy 80s stuff was always around, which probably isn't surprising for people that know our tunes. But
can you sort of track that back, that kind of love of melody, because and synth playovers and things like that. Like I think that time in music, which sometimes gets kind of a little bit overlooked, like, you know, just how incredible bands like Duran Duran and anything that Vince Clarke's ever been in, you know.
Yeah.
Like the melody in that synth pop era, you know, and the playovers were just fucking incredible. Like,
yeah.
And you know, can you, as you write and you hear and you're sitting in the studio like listening to your tracks over and over, do you ever sort of like make them kind of sort of connections to things that, you know, you was exposed to at that age?
Definitely, and I think it's the same with Jim and everybody else in the band. You know, like when we're in the van, having between gigs and stuff like that, the kind of stuff that he used to drive. It used to be his band that was sort of varied us around, and so his tunes would be on. You know what I mean? He'd decide what we were listening to, but he's big into his 80s stuff as well. And I think it's a bit of a nostalgia, just a childhood nostalgia thing. You know, looking back to happy times, and it's probably a I don't know if that's good or bad, but it's going drawing on a period that we've, you know, felt good and like a good time in our lives. I think that's probably what we've got in common when we gravitate to that. I mean, we've moved on a little bit with the latest record. We've put there's probably some 90s guitarist stuff. So we're like, what we're going to do is just keep drawing from previous eras.
Yeah.
Till we come up to modern day, keep us going through 5, 6, 7 albums or whatever. But,
Well, yeah. You mentioned that your dad was a DJ, and so for track 5, I'm going to ask you the song that soundtracked your years clubbing.
Right, okay, yeah, I remember what I had in mind for this one. I mean, in Manchester, the clubs I went to when I was a kid were indie clubs, really. So there's 42nd Street, Fifth Ave, The Venue, Brick House. This was sort of the period I was going with, probably sort of 96 to early 2000, 2004. That's when I was proper going out every night kind of thing. But I mean, and obviously the big Mancunian tracks were on in that period, sort of I'm the Resurrection and Oasis and all that kind of thing. But it was, I'm going to say Common People by Pulp, because it's, to me, it's one of the best singles of all time. It's an amazing, got an amazing story in it. Like lyrically, it's like just brilliant. Just a great, great pop record, really. And it sort of felt summed up that time. It was always one of those, just felt top, you know, like sort of that period, 96, 97. Everything, the world seemed to be going in a reasonable direction then. It's like the opposite. I mean, but I've realised I've got to the age where, as well, like everybody does, like where they go, oh, it's not like it was in the old days. You know, everything was better then, you know. So I'm conscious of that. But, yeah, I was like 17, 18, 19. So it's, you know, just good times.
I mean, I couldn't agree with you any more that it's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, pop record ever made. And the full version, it has to be the full version.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the lyrics to You'll Never Know It Feels to Live Your Life With No Meaning or Control, you know, and it's just incredible. And I reckon at least every 2 weeks I will go and find them performing it. I have a Glastonbury performance when they slotted in for the Rosies, when the Rosies pulled out last minute.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they done it at Reading about 10 years ago, when they done a comeback and they play that, oh, man, it's like... Have you watched the documentary on Pulp and Common People and how they put that together?
I have, actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
It's amazing, yeah.
It's like the layers in that record. Like, every time you can still hear new bits in it, it's euphoric, right? I just...
Yeah. I watched that Glastonbury performance as well, because that was one of the good things about the lockdown, I suppose. There aren't many good things, but we got a greatest hits of Glastonbury, didn't we? Which was pretty cool. And I'd not seen that set before, and I was like, that's just great. And he's a brilliant frontman as well, Jarvis. Like, he's like really physical, and you know, like, he's just wit comes through him, doesn't it? It's just top.
Hello, I've interrupted the podcast again, haven't I? Sorry, it won't take a sec. All I want to say is, the songs that we're talking about in this podcast, if we can't play them, it's just because of the regulations regarding playing licensed music and such. So if you want to hear the songs, just go over to Spotify and search Off The Beat and Track Podcast, and you can listen to all the songs, because I've put playlists up for each of these. If you can't find it on there, I'll send links on all the social media accompanying each episode. So you've just got to press that one button and you can go through and you can enjoy all the songs that our guest picks. Anyway, I'll shut up, get back to the podcast. See you on the other side. Okay, for track 6, favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Right, okay. Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now by the Smiths. They're a bit... Mine and my brother's in particular favourite bands. I had a friend growing up, Rob Allen, who was like absolutely idolised them. I remember going in the pub once and we got chatting about music before I'd really got into them, although my dad had played them at home. And I remember sort of dismissing them as miserable and it nearly floored him. And he's like, no, you need to sort of get into it more. And then I think he gave me Queen Is Dead. And I just, that record, me and my wife absolutely just had it on repeat for ages. But yeah, that's a good, it's a good example of one of their, you know, they're great. I could have picked a lot of different Smith songs, to be honest, but Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now there's a lot of the character of the Smiths in the title. It's just, yeah, I think lyrically and Mars guitar, and you know, Morris's lyrics and vocals, just, I mean, obviously all the band are amazing, but in particular.
And I do think that the credit should always go to Andy and Mike as well. You know, I think, you know, as a band, like, some of them bass lines are just off the scale. And don't get me wrong, you know, Johnny Marr's the coolest man on the planet, but... You know, the Smiths were a four-piece, and I think, like, I do feel sorry for them sometimes. I think them two boys get kind of, you know, pushed in the shadows a little bit, and I think, you know, and the drums as well, you know, it's not flamboyant, but it's the Smiths. It makes the Smiths what they are. Do you know what I mean? And I'm obsessive. You know, I'm smothered in Smiths tattoos, and I have to ask this to any other Smiths fan, like. Have you found in recent times with some of the stuff that's come out of Morrissey's mouth as a Smiths fan, you know, can you separate, you know, the man from the art?
I mean, there was sort of early rumblings, wasn't there, when he sort of there were years back when he sort of, I think he did, I can't remember what festival it was, but he was sort of draped in the Union Jack.
And I was at that National Front
Disco and stuff.
That was supporting Madness at Finsbury Park in I think 1992. I was at that show. Yeah. He didn't play the next day. He pulled out. because he got bottled and coined, and it was quite a weird thing. There was literally me and about another six people at the front, sort of like desperately trying to sort of grab a gladiola. But everybody else was not feeling Morrissey that day. It was, and I think he...
Yeah,
strange.
I'm gonna name drop now. My tutor at uni was Linda Sterling. It was his, like... best mate, you know what I mean? Like when he wrote Cemetery Gates and used to meet, it was her that he met at the Cemetery Gates kind of thing. She fronted Ludus and stuff back in the day. But yeah, she was one of his great friends. And I remember speaking to her about it because I was curious to know what his politics were, because it was always a bit, but she wouldn't say that he was racist necessarily, but you know, she was sort of, wouldn't say that he wasn't, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that it was I'd sort of had rumblings that he was that way inclined back then. But I mean, it's mainstream popular culture now as well. I mean, I've got many, many people on my Facebook that come out with stuff that isn't, you know, much different to what Morrissey says. So it's like I kind of exclude, and but they don't have, they are not devoid of redeeming characteristics because of that.
Yeah.
Either, do you know what I mean? People are, and people would find my politics, you know, objectionable, I'm sure. It's a difficult one, separating the sort of the art from the,
it comes up so often, and because so many people mention the Smiths and so many people mention Michael Jackson, and so, you know, I mean, they're very separate things that, you know, both are accused of doing, but it is just that thing that, you know, both of these artists, music is just ingrained in our, you know, in our everyday lives, and it's like, can you listen to them records and disassociate yourself from, you know, some of the things that have come from, you know, their actions, and you know, it's you know, I could not listen to the Smiths. You know, I can put Michael Jackson over there, but yeah, the Smiths is just, yeah, it's weird. He's a strange one, man.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's I don't agree with him, but and it seems somehow sort of contrary to this sort of outsider narrative in his lyrics. You know, back in the day, it sort of something doesn't quite add up, but. I don't know.
It is.
But the same with Jacko. I still listen to Michael Jackson, and he was never proved in a court of law or anything. But I don't know. I mean, Elvis. But Elvis was a big hero. We have this discussion in the band actually, but I think, you know, Priscilla was young, wasn't she, when they first got together? It's but I don't know.
Bill Wyman, Rolling Stones, it's endless. So, okay. Well, you get to play DJ now and play a record and turn someone onto something new, because this is the final track, Aaron. It's a song that many may not know that you would like them to hear.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be a fair amount of people that probably heard this when it was out there, but it's a song that was on the This Is England soundtrack. I think it was the series rather than the movie. And it's just a really beautiful, melancholy solo acoustic kind of track. It's a song called Dogwood Blossom by Fionn Regan. It's a beautiful record.
It's a stunning record.
When
I got the list of your songs sent over and I saw that, it was one of them moments I thought, do you know what? I've not listened to that for a couple of years. I need to go and listen to that now. And it really delivers that. It's a beautiful, beautiful record, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I was... I think the scene was obviously quite a... Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy going in it. This Is England, really. Do you know what I mean? It was quite... I can't remember the scene, but it was... I remember being quite a heavy emotional scene. I've not seen it for some years, but I didn't know whether I'd sort of carried... The emotion of it had been carried by the context, if you know what I mean, as a piece in its own right, whether it has it, but it's just beautiful. Yeah, there's a line in it that, "Darling, darling, the dam's gonna give. It's inevitable the way that you live." That's a top line. Nice record.
So Aaron, as it appears there's a light at the end of this lockdown tunnel, and hopefully a normality will resume soon. What have you got coming up, and what are you looking forward to?
We've been writing in the early part of this year when the lockdown happened. So we've got a lockdown record out in October. We just released a single today actually as well. And then March, April next year, we've got our rescheduled shows that were actually originally from March, April this year, but got rescheduled to the end of the year and then pushed out into next year. We're going out to the UK and Europe, and then I'm sure there'll be some festivals and stuff like that, maybe some outdoor shows and stuff. We're just sort of like everybody else waiting to see it all develop. And I'm encouraged by the fact that there's been some socially distanced outdoor shows that seem to have gone well. So I'm sure that touring will happen in some form or another next year. It's just when you're sort of dealing with lots of different countries and stuff like that. And we really want to get out to America as well at some point. So I just want, we're just sort of keeping our fingers crossed like everybody else and hoping the world gets back on its feet.
Absolutely. And for people that want to keep up to speed with what's going on, where's the best place to go and find out what's going on?
We're really active on Facebook. So it's facebook.com/theslowreadersclub. But obviously you can find us on Instagram. Twitter, our website is theslowreadersclub.co.uk. But yeah, come and say hello if you like what I've chosen and it makes you intrigued as to
well, we put together,
what our tunes are like. Yeah.
We do put together a Spotify playlist to accompany this podcast as well, so people can listen to all your choices and some of the other records we've spoke about. So we'll give everyone a reason to go and listen to Steel Skin there. And
awesome.
Aaron, thanks so much for your time today, mate. It's been a real pleasure talking
Cheers,
records Steve. With you. And,
thank you.
And
cheers, mate.
Best of luck with a single. And
cheers, mate.
Yeah. See you all soon.
Thanks for having me on. Nice one, mate.
Pleasure,
mate.
See ya. Take easy, mate. There you have it. Aaron Starkey of the Slow Readers Club. Go and check him out if you're new to the band. And if you're not new to the band, then, just go and enjoy the fruits of their labour. Thanks loads to Aaron for giving up his time and chatting today on Off The Beaten Track podcast. Wonderful chat, some amazing song choices. I'm always happy to talk about Stilt Skin, and it's the benchmark chat. It really is. When anybody tries to be cool, that's two people that have picked that now. So, if Slow Readers Club and Block Party choose it, then there you have it, No one wants to try and be cool when it comes to that. And that's one of the things that I really like about this podcast is just people's honesty. Nobody's ever going in trying to be super cool and, saying that they were listening to Can when they were like seven. Everybody's sort of just being honest and opening up about their lives and their creative journeys, and it's a real privilege to sit opposite these people and chew the fat with them. I'm back next time. In the meantime, if you want to go and have a look in the archives or check out the merch or check out the Patreon, it's all over at offthebeatentrackpodcast.com. I'll see you next time. Take care. Bye-bye. I've got an announcement. Save Our Souls Clothing, www.sosclothing.co.uk. Why am I telling you this? Because they're our official sponsor. Yeah, that's right. Go and check them out because their clothing is off the scale. You're going to love it. So they've decided they want to be our sponsor, which is amazing. And what I have to do is I have to tell you about why they're amazing. So here's a little bit of blurb. So they've only been going a year. And they're based in Southend-on-Sea, just up the road from me. They put the company together based on a love of tattoos and alternative music. And they've worked with some of the greatest artists around the world to produce these items of clothing that are as unique as you lot. All the designs are printed using biodegradable, sustainable and water-based inks. In addition to that, they only print on garments made by members of Fair Wear Foundation. I mean, come on, great clothing and a conscience. Since going live in April last year, they've seen their audience grow massively and are now selling orders all across the world. And they were recognised by Cosmopolitan magazine as one of the best sustainable clothing brands alongside names such as Stella McCartney. I mean, that's quite a first year, right? So, Go and check them out, because they've put a lot of love into supporting this podcast, and I couldn't be happier. What else they've done is they've given you 15% off. So if you head over to www.sosclothing.co.uk, do a bit of shopping, see what you like, throw it in the basket, and then on the way out, put in the discount code BEAT15, BEAT15, and that'll save you 15% off. Amazing, right? www.sosclothing.co.uk, official sponsors of Off the Beaten Track podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network with me, Stu Whiffin.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.